Washington Square On Air is the audio town square for the Washington Square Review, Lansing Community College's literary journal. Writers, readers, scholars, publishing professionals, citizens of the world, gather here and chat about all things writing. Hey there, this is Melissa Ford Luckin. I'm here today with Rich Glennon, whose poem Neptune is in our Summer 24 issue. Hey, Rich, how you doing?
Hey, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. Tell us about your poem. How did you come to write it?
Well, I'm not really too sure, really. When I think of the poems that I write, I often go back to thinking about what I was reading at the time. I feel like I'm sort of like a pretty impressionable person. So whatever I'm like reading at the time, that will really like inform my writing at the time. Like when I was younger, like in my 20s and my late teens and 20s, I was really into Bukowski. I was reading everything Bukowski. And so my writing was like very much like Bukowski. And then, you know, I got older and I'd read more like Billy Collins and George Bulgaire and Kay Ryan as of late. And I felt like my writings were kind of like, I would still hold on to like my previous Bukowskian phase and then just kind of like pepper into whatever I'm reading at the moment. So I guess I hear people talk about that sort of thing. And I think that's sort of like how you develop your own voice. It's just kind of like, and it could be like an amalgamation of things you read and what inspires you and everything. So at that time, I think I might have been reading Jericho Brown. And although I wouldn't say it was like kind of like in his style, I finished reading his book. I forgot the name of it. It's the one he won the Pulitzer for. But I think it was slightly inspired by that, but some time had passed in between. So it didn't come off so Jericho Brown-y. It was more me, you know. Not to say all the poems aren't me, but yeah, that's sort of like, I guess, like how I came with like the structure and just like kind of like maybe like what was inspiring me at the time. But I'm not exactly too sure. I remember the first line, just like, if I was a planet, I would be Neptune. When I wrote it, to me, it felt like almost like a writing exercise thing, like something you would read in like a how to read poetry book, like pretend you are a planet and then go from there, you know?
You just invented that writing exercise.
Huh?
You just invented that writing exercise.
Yeah, I guess. At the time I was like, oh, this kind of sounds, you know, preschooly or something like that. I don't think I really had much to write about at the time. So I just kind of like just rolled with it. And then for whatever reason, it just brought me back to just sort of feeling like, you know, a bit like ostracized or like lonely during my grade school era.
Yeah. One of the things I was thinking about when you were talking about the influences is it reminded me of how little kids learn to talk, right? So it makes sense that as writers, we learn to write by surrounding ourselves with voices and then pulling from those voices and being inspired from them, because that's the same way that kids learn to talk. They're surrounded by voices and they pull inspiration from that.
No, yeah, you're exactly right. Because I try to read every day. I feel like as someone who wants to be like a writer, like a full-time writer, I have to eat. I have to have something that I'm always like digesting. It's like if I go like a few days without reading anything, sometimes I'll sit down to write a poem and I'm like, oh my God, how do you write a poem? What does a poem look like? Like I need to like look at a poem, like look at either one of my own poems or just look at like other poems like Kay Ryan or Collins or something. And just remind myself like how to put it in your terms, like to remember how to speak like a poet.
What is it about poems in particular that appeals to you?
Well, I write poems and I also write short stories. And sometimes when I sit down to write, I'll think, because I give myself like an hour to write every day. I would like to dedicate more time, but life is such that I can't really fit more than that. And as it is, I don't write in the weekends anymore, because that's more set aside for kids and stuff. So Monday through Friday, I write an hour a day, and sometimes I'll just sit down to write, and I'll think, oh well, this is a good short story idea, or it could be a story idea. But I'm like, just the idea of writing an entire story, even though it's a short story, it just seems so daunting. My short stories don't go past 2,000 words. They're very short, you know. And when I write poems, it's more like it's kind of like playing. It's kind of like just like sort of like goofing off, you know. Even though like people will say like it's harder to write a poem because you got to pick just the right word, just the right order, you know. There's so few, it's so concise that you have to be like exact with everything. But I like doing that, and it doesn't feel like work. So I guess to answer your question, it's because I'm lazy.
Do you ever start working on a poem and then find that it really does need to be a short story instead?
Yeah, yeah.
And then are you disappointed because you're like, oh, now I have to?
Well, the antidote to that is to just say, no, it's a narrative poem.
Okay.
And it's going to have lines that stretch halfway across the page and be okay with it not being great.
For sure.
Because it should have been a story. No, but yeah, there are times where I will catch myself and I'll be like, no, there's more to this. I can't fit it inside of like a poem form, you know, and I don't really would like to write like epic poems, like long poems, or even like narrative poems, even though I have written them before. Like if they stay poems, it's because I was too lazy to change them into short stories. But yeah, there are times, yeah, that will, and there are times where I was writing a short story and that kind of made me think of a poem. Like, and that's usually if I'm just describing something or a scene or something. And a lot of times in my stories, I feel like there is like some like poetry in there, the way I do it, at least I try, how I describe things and everything.
Mm. Cool. I wanted to back up to Charles Bukowski, because I know you wrote on him in college. Tell us a little bit about that, and why did he click with you?
So I said I was very impressionable. And I first discovered Bukowski because my freshman year English teacher, Professor Robert Beauvais, I guess I'll have to send this to him since I mentioned it to him. He introduced me to it. He introduced us to The Shoelace, which I absolutely loved. And I thought that it was so simple. At the same time, I think I was taking like a Victorian era poetry class. And I mean, that was just that was painful. Like, I really don't like reading anything. I tried, and I really just don't like reading like anything that's like, you know, okay, I get it. You're a genius. Okay, you're smart. All right. I mean, you know, I feel like if you were more of a genius, maybe you could say it in a simpler way so everyone could understand it. Like, I don't like reading basically anything before like the 1900s, like 1920s. And I just got so sick of like reading like, you know, Wordsworth and all these guys. And to hear Bukowski, I was like, oh, that's great. And then you start going to like his personality, which we all know, you know, like just basically like alcoholic. And he's always has like many varying relationships with women. And, you know, he could just be outrageous and he would just be on stage and just downing bottles of wine and fighting with the audience. And at the time I was 19, and even though it is illegal, I was drinking at that point. And I thought, wow, this guy is fantastic. Not to mention he would also found success later in life. And I didn't have a father growing up. My grandfather was like my father figure. So I feel like I kind of was more attached to him because he was like an older guy. And he dressed like my grandfather. He always wore like slacks and a button-down shirt and a bunch of crap in his shirt pocket. And I was like, I want to be like this guy. So I started, I was like, he seems easy enough to emulate. So I just became, I just became like this Bukowski, and sort of like, I was like, just, I was drinking at night, and I was saying, it's okay to drink every night.
Yeah. That part's the easy part. Just.
So I was writing though. I
that's the hard part.
Yeah. I don't know if I was writing anything good, but I was writing, I was getting published, and I was like, this is great. This is working. I'm going to be like Bukowski.
Was there a point when you realized that maybe you weren't actually going to be like that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. But it took a lot of self-abuse to, to realize that. I got sober when I was 28. So it took more or less than a decade to figure it out. But, So anyway, you know, so I was writing, I was reading everything that he wrote. And as an English major, you have to write a thesis your senior year. And I asked Professor Beauvais if he would help me with that. And I was reading him anyway. I loved reading him. It was like a labor of love. And I wrote, I forget how many pages it was. I think it was either 20 or 30 or 40. I really don't remember. But it came out like just like so easily, because it was, I just held it so near and dear to my heart. In fact, I also, you had the option to come up with like an independent course, I think they called it, where you would go to your professor and say, I want to read this type of this author or study this certain topic. And if they approved it, then you could do it. And so I took a course on Bukowski with that same professor.
And was this at Hofstra?
No. Hofstra was my grad school. This was at St. Francis College.
Oh, okay.
In Brooklyn Heights.
Okay.
Yeah.
So thinking back, did you have a, and you might not remember the answer to this, but your thesis, like your main point, like what were you talking about?
I don't think it was anything specifically. I think it was just like the metaphors he used, you know, different motifs that always came up. I think I might have spoken about how his poetry had more like a form, like more structure, or was a little more like, I guess, more akin to like how the beats were at that time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, more like maybe hidden meanings and a little more cryptic. And then how it just kind of like lost like a lot of that form and a lot of that like mysticism. It was like much more straightforward and blunt over time. Yeah, I think I focused on that. It's been a while.
Did you have any thoughts about why that happened? Why the change?
I don't know. Maybe he just got older and was like, I'm just going to speak the truth, man. I'm done with just, you know, can't sugarcoating it. Maybe it was the booze that was affecting his writing. You know, maybe some muscles in his brain got a little soft and he just didn't have the flowery language to wrap up his words into. I'm not really too sure. I wish I could ask him.
Yeah. Thinking about what we were talking about earlier is the influences, it makes me wonder if his own influences changed. You know, like we were talking about how as a writer you surround yourself with different kinds of work and you pull inspiration from that, and if his own pool of inspiration changed over time, his writing perhaps would have also changed partly as a consequence of that.
Yeah, maybe. I will say though that he did mention a lot of different writers. John Fonte comes to mind. Dostoevsky comes to mind. Some other guys. Most of the writers he mentioned, he hated.
Well, it's always good to know what you don't like as well as what you do like.
Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about was an internship you did with some musician interviews. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. So I got that internship at St. Francis College. Authors, journalists, they came in and they were basically looking for an intern to help them transcribe musician interviews so they could compile an oral history of heavy metal, which became Louder Than Hell. And yeah, I applied. I remember I interviewed in some coffee shop in Brooklyn, and it was great. I mean, basically my job was listening to these artists. It was kind of challenging, I'm not going to lie, because a lot of times they were either currently inebriated or they had been inebriated for most of their life and now they were older. And it was like, really, I had to listen to like the interview on like 2 times slower speed. I don't know how you would say that, but it was like the slowest speed possible. And still I would get like a bunch of like words wrong, you know? And I remember just like having all these transcriptions peppered with unintelligible in parentheses, you know, with a timestamp next to it. It was rough, but it was great. It was Catherine Turman and John Wiederhorn. And I don't know if you heard of them, but they have a lot of like different articles and stuff. And Catherine Turman actually used to do a radio show with Alice Cooper. I don't know if that's still going on or not. It was great. I was working at that job at the same time I was working at a pizzeria while I was going to school. So it was a lot going on, and I didn't have any like time. It was a stressful period of my life. But so I wound up like, I was like, well, this is a unpaid internship. And although it was like cool and felt like it was good on my resume, and I was meeting a lot of cool people.
About?
Yeah, I met like Rob Halford and my mind's going blank. But a bunch of other people. I was like, well, it's unpaid though, and I'm getting paid at the pizzeria. So I was like, I told him like, you know, it was like, I think they asked me for 6 months and it was going on like 9 months or so. And I was like, I don't know if I could dedicate time to it. But you know, I kind of regret that decision. I feel like I should have, since I wanted to be a writer, maybe just like staying in a job under the realm of writing might have been the wiser decision. And just, you know,
practical issues do, though, you know, have an impact on our lives. Bill paying, it's a thing.
Yeah. But at the same time, I did live at home. I didn't have like, you know, crazy bills. I wasn't married yet. I didn't have kids yet. Mm-hmm. You know, like looking back, I was like, oh yeah, I could have just like, you know, done stuff around the house and, you know, did chores and to make a living, you know, just scrounge off my parents.
Right. Get a little chore chart. Yeah. Cut the lawn, get paid.
Yeah.
When you were listening to the transcripts, was there anything that you pulled from that influenced your own creativity or your creative process? Like when you were listening to the transcripts, aside from writing down these unintelligible words, what did you pull from it? What kind of clicked with you?
I don't know if anything clicked for me per se from what the musicians were saying. Yeah, at that time, like I said, I was in my early 20s. I was, you know, drinking and stuff. And so I was like, oh, well, these guys, they did it too. You know, so no reason to stray from the path. I guess I'll be okay. You know, that there's successes, you know, just keep, as long as you keep on with your craft, you'll be all right. But what did stick with me was seeing Catherine and John work. They worked so hard on it. And that's sort of just like, when you see someone working hard on something that they love to do, it's like, it's infectious, you know, sort of like, you know, if you ever watched like, you know, Apollo 13 and you see like these like crazy, like intelligent people doing like things like, you know, in the space station or in the shuttle. And they're just like these like geniuses doing what they love. It's like, it's motivating to apply that to what you like to do.
For sure. So it sounds like that's probably something that stuck with you, understanding, you know, hard work and doing what you love and the combination of the two things.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Because you were saying that you write for an hour a day, and that may not seem like a lot, but consistently an hour a day, even 5 days a week, that's kind of a lot, actually, you know?
Yeah, sometimes it feels like it.
On those days when it does feel like it, what? How do you just keep at it?
Oh, just brute force. Yeah, I don't know.
I think that's it. I think that's the only answer.
I just keep doing it. Yep. Sometimes what I'll do is when I first sit down, I'll journal a little bit. I don't save my journal entries or anything, but I open up a fresh page and I just type about what I'm thinking, what's bothering me, what I'm happy about, what I have to do. You know, sometimes I'll just be talking about what I have to do later on in the day, because I always write, like, that's like my first thing. First thing in the morning, what I do, like, while my brain is still working, I can't write later on, which reminds me of, like, what Toni Morrison said. Like, she always wrote, she got up early before the kids woke up, and she would write, like, you know, 5 to 7 or whatever, and while her brain still worked. And not to compare myself to Toni Morrison, but that's exactly what I do. I wake up before the kids get up, and so I have the house to myself for a little while. But yeah, a lot of times, like, I'll write these journal entries, and sometimes something will come out of there. Because when I'm writing, sometimes I just can't help to use, like, a turn of phrase or something, or it sounds someone just come out, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's, maybe that could be something, you know? And then I'll move that paragraph down to the bottom of the page and start writing something. Or I'll just, hopefully, I have a poem that's in progress. I didn't finish it the day before. And then I'll work on that a little bit.
Sounds great. Do you usually have coffee, tea, water, a beverage? What do you got?
Oh, yeah, coffee. I don't do the Bukowski thing anymore. I have a cup of black coffee, my nicotine pouches. I got my vitamins.
All right. That's a good assortment. That's a good collection.
For the most part, clean living.
Nice. All right. If people want to follow you online, where can they find you?
It's Rich Glennon, RichGlennon, on Instagram and on Tumblr.
And do you post the same thing on both of them?
I do, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know if anybody attends the New Eureka open mic. I also attend that most Thursdays, depends.
And where?
That's like a poetry cafe in Manhattan.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thanks a lot for stopping by and chatting with us.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm surprised how fast this went.
Thanks for stopping by the Audio Town Square of the Washington Square Review. Until next time, this has been the Washington Square On Air from Lansing Community College. To find out more about a writer's community and literary journal, visit lcc.edu/WSR. Writing is messy, but do it anyway.